is a shaila that came up recently in the last 2 weeks, and it's a fascinating one, about a wedding. And the shaila was as follows. There was a man in our community whose grandchild was getting married, and he was very, very excited and looking forward to celebrating and participating in his grandson's wedding. And what happened was he had a family member, he had a brother who was doing just fine, and then unfortunately, very suddenly, got very, very critically sick and was put on hospice care. And he called me and he said, what will happen if my brother passes away within a week before my grandson's wedding? Will I be able to go to the wedding in the middle of Shiva? And he said he would be devastated if he wouldn't be able to go to his grandson's chasana. So that's question number one. And then I'd like to discuss what I advised him to do, which is part two, which I think is more interesting and fascinating than part number one. So what is the potential problem of an avil leaving his home in the middle of Shiva and going to participate in a wedding? We have two potential problems, and that is number one, in Shulchan Aruch Yerodea Hilchos Avelus, the Shulchan Aruch says that an avil is not supposed to be besimcha. An avil is supposed to be in a certain frame of mind where he's supposed to be feeling the avelus. Rav Soloveitchik famously commented that avelus, if you have a person who goes through the week of Shiva sitting on a low chair and taking off leather shoes and not showering and not doing all the things that an avil is not supposed to do, but at no point during that week do they feel the sense of loss, do they feel the sense of avel, they have not fulfilled the obligation of avelus. Avelus is not just that we do something, avelus is that we need to feel a certain way. The same way on Yom Tov, Rav Soloveitchik explained that Simchas Yom Tov is not just that we eat meat and we drink wine and we have candies for the children and clothing for the people who enjoy that. All of that is nice, but all of that is supposed to bring us to a sense of simcha, to a feeling that we should have inside of our heart, inside of our minds. And that's why by Avelus it says that not only does he have to go through the steps and the process and do certain things, or not do certain things, but still, the Shulchan Aruch says, on top of that, Avel Aser B'Simcha. An Avel is not allowed to have a sense of rejoicing. An Avel is not allowed to be B'Simcha. How long does that sense of lack of simcha extend? So the Shulchan Aruch then qualifies and says, Al kol mesim nichnas lebeis hamishta la'achar 30 yom. For a relative who passes away, the avil only needs to abstain from simcha for 30 days. However, if it's aviv imo, if he's in avelus for his father or his mother, then we know that that is a prolonged avelus and we have to wait yud beis chodesh. So for the entire duration of 12 months, the avil will not participate in a simcha. It's not supposed to be in a state of simcha. It's supposed to be feeling a sense of loss. And then the Shulchan Aruch says what happens in a Shana Muberes, which obviously is relevant now. So then he says, Mutar la'achar yud beis chodesh. It doesn't go by the date. It goes by 12 months from the time of the passing. So therefore, this year, it would be a little bit of a discrepancy. You would have a 13-month year, but you would only be in Avelis for 12 months out of the 13, and the yard site would be, obviously, a month after the Avelis has completed. That is obstacle number one, that by going and participating in a wedding, a person is certainly going to put themselves in a state of simcha, which an Avel is not supposed to do. Number two, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Avel Shavua HaRishon, the first week, meaning in the middle of Shiva, Eino yotze mi pesach beso, an avil is not supposed to leave his home. The avil is supposed to remain in the home the entire week. Afilu lishma birchas chupa o birchas hamila. Even if he wants to go participate in a bris mila, even if he wants to participate in a chupa, the avil is really supposed to remain in his home, and he should not leave the home for the entire week. What's the rationale? What's the reason for that halacha? Obviously, the reason is because if he's going to go out and be in public and be mingling with other people, then he's going to start having discussions with them about all kinds of things, and he's going to divert his attention. He's no longer going to be focused solely on the avelus. He's going to be distracted, and that is really not supposed to be what happens during the week of Shiva. And unfortunately, we see sometimes in a besa avil that happens. People come, they talk about irrelevant things, they tell jokes, and they all are probably well-meaning, but it's really inappropriate. The Shulchan Aruch tells us what's supposed to be discussed at a Shiva house, what's not supposed to be spoken about at a Shiva house, how we're supposed to interact with the Avel. There are rules and regulations to how we do this, and we're not supposed to divert our attention away from the Avel himself, who is supposed to be focusing solely on the sense of loss. My father often told us that when he was sitting Shiva, he had hundreds, thousands of people who came to be Menachem Avel, and he said, of all the people who came, he thinks the only one who he remembers who was Menachem Avel Kahalacha was, I hope nobody here was there, so I'm not calling any of you out, but he says he believes that the only person who he recalls was Menachem Avel the proper way was the Munkach Rebbe in Borough Park. They happen to be friendly. They have a relationship for many, many years. And the Munkachareva came to me, Menachem Avil, and my father said he followed all the rules that it says in Shulchan Aruch of how a Menachem is supposed to come, what the Menachem is supposed to say to the Avil, when he's supposed to speak, how he's supposed to speak. And my father said that that made an impression on him. So based on that simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch, it would seem quite clear that an Avil would be prohibited from participating in a Simcha. There is no special dispensation in Shulchan Aruch for a parent, for a grandparent, for a sibling. If they're in Avelis, they are not allowed to participate in a wedding. Along comes Rav Moshe Feinstein. Shulchan Aruch was written in the 1500s. Rav Moshe Feinstein lived in the 1900s, so it's many, many years after the Shulchan Aruch's Psak. And he makes a very bold statement. Rav Moshe has this not in one shuva, if I believe correctly, I saw over the last couple of days, a number of different shuvas where Rav Moshe discusses the same issue, and he continues to defend and support his position. So listen to what Rav Moshe writes. The first time that it comes up is in Igros Moshe, Yeredei Chelek Beis. And there he says, Hinei, what I'm going to discuss in this tshuva is Bidvar Avi HaKala or Avi HaChasan. I'm sure many of us have heard of such a story where the father or mother of the Chasan or Kala unfortunately loses a relative right before the wedding. And now they are not just in Shloshim or Yud Beis Chodesh, they're actually in the middle of Shiva when the wedding date comes. What are they supposed to do? So they asked Rav Moshe whether they should push the wedding off, or does the parent have to stay home, or are they allowed to participate? Rav Moshe said, You heard correctly that I made a psak that the parent is allowed to participate, even in the middle of Shiva, in the wedding of their child. Says Rav Moshe, Asher Kasav Yedidi, you wrote to me, Sheyesh Tmeim Alzeh, there are those who are wondering, how could I have made such a psak? Virotza Leida Hamakaran, you want to know, where is my source? How do I know such a thing? So Rav Moshe, it's a very unusual tshuva. Usually he gets a shaila, he responds. Here, he didn't get the shaila. The shaila came in way earlier, and he said his psak to an individual. And then later on, he was getting hate mail. People were saying, how can you make such a psak? It doesn't make sense. It's against the Shulchan Aruch. And he felt the need to defend his psak. Not once, but twice or three times in the tshuvas, he feels the need to continue to defend his psak because he felt very strongly that he was correct. And Rav Moshe goes into a discussion here to explain why it's permissible. And in the end, he puts in something that is a fascinating point to consider. Rav Moshe says, imagine if a parent is not going to be at their child's wedding. Imagine the amount of tsar, the amount of pain that is going to be caused to the parent and to the chasen. I'm not clear. In the two different shuvas, he writes it differently. In one place, he says, the amount of pain to a parent. I prepared for months and weeks in advance to get to this very special moment, or I should say for years. I prepared my child from the time the child was little till the time they come down the aisle for the chuppah. I've been preparing for this moment, and now you're going to tell me I'm not able to participate. That is considered a tremendous tsar. And Rav Moshe says, we know that parents would even be willing to go to great lengths to show up at their children's wedding. Rav Moshe writes in another tshuva that we know that people spend a tremendous amount of money to make their children's wedding. Sometimes inappropriately they spend a lot of money, but that is the reality. We see that people are willing to expend a tremendous amount of money to marry off their children and to have a simcha. So Rav Moshe says, we know that the halacha is, the Rama writes, that an avel, in general, the Shulchan Aruch says an avel is not allowed to do malacha in the middle of Shiva, which sometimes becomes very complicated. It used to be, if somebody had a business, my father was telling me about this last night, it used to be, if somebody had a business, so they closed down the business for a week, okay, it wasn't a big deal, you know, there wasn't such a big manufacturer that was running machines and companies and trading and in and out and export. But now that we have companies that are so complicated and we have partners and we have ownerships by shareholders and different people, you can't just shut down a business for a week. So it presents a major problem. What is an avil supposed to do in the middle of Shiva when he's not allowed to do business, but yet the business has to continue to run? Not all businesses are able to close down for a week. So that's an issue that you have to think about. However, the Rama does say, let's say a person does have their own business, and they would potentially be able to close the business for a week. However, the Rama says, if you have a major deal that comes your way, and now because the person's in the middle of Shiva, he's unable to go ahead and get the deal because he's not able to do business, says Rav Moshe, and you don't have anybody else who's adept enough to do it for you. It's not like you have partners that you can send to do the deal for you. You don't have people who know how to negotiate on your behalf. If that's the case, writes the Rama, Mutar Lasos Ha'avel Ba'atzma, the Avel will be allowed to do Malacha even in the middle of Shiva. Again, the Rama says you should do it Bitsina. It's not appropriate to go out publicly and make a whole big to-do. You're in the middle of Shiva. But still, if it's a Hefsid Meruba, so then you'd be allowed to. Says Rav Moshe, if Avil will be allowed to go to work during Shiva for a Hefsid Meruba, then This would certainly be a hefsed merubah. I prepared for my child's wedding. Imagine the amount of pain that I'm going to have that I'm not going to be at the wedding. And Rav Moshe then writes another tshuva to one of his great talmidim, Rav Ephraim Greenblatt, who was very close to Rav Moshe, and he lived in Memphis, Tennessee, I believe, and he wrote many, many questions at one time. He didn't live near Rav Moshe later on in his life, so he would send like 20 questions, and Rav Moshe would write back, similar, he would write back, you know, 20 answers all at the same, this is every week, Rav David sends me 20 questions in a row on the shiur, even though the shiur is only 20 minutes, somehow he has question per minute, it's pretty amazing. So, and they're all good questions. So, Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt used to send Rav Moshe 20 questions in a row, and Rav Moshe would respond to each one, and then they were printed in the Igros Moshe all in one tshuva, which is strange, because all the questions had nothing to do with each other. One is on Hilchos Shabbos, one's on Hilchos Trefos, one's on Hilchos Shechita, and they all have to do with different parts of Shulchan Aruch, but he had questions along the way, and he asked. So here, he says to Rav Moshe, somebody told me that you made a psak that a parent in the middle of Shiva is allowed to go to their child's wedding. How can that be? And Rav Moshe says, well, I guess I need to go ahead and defend my psak once again. I guess you weren't convinced the first time around, so now I'm going to write it again. And he rehashes the whole issue again. And then he says, haven't we all seen that there are family members who will travel from one side of the world to the other to participate in a wedding? So that's very strange, says Rav Moshe. If we know that family members are willing to go to the other side of the world, and Rav Moshe writes, it's not only rich people that do that. Hamonam would do that. If your child is getting married in another country, even if you're not a wealthy person, very often you'll find that the parents will do whatever they can to get themselves to the other side of the world for the wedding. So Rav Moshe says, that means that weddings are very important to us. And that means that for me to miss my child's wedding would be a major deal, would be a very big thing. And therefore, says Rav Moshe, we would assume that that would be a good enough reason for us to allow the parent to attend their child's wedding. That's what Rav Moshe says. Now, Rav Moshe doesn't stop there. He then continues the discussion in another tshuva and explains the details of his psak and how far it would go. So says Rav Moshe, imagine you have a parent who's in the middle of Shiva, shows up to the child's wedding, very nice. Would we be allowed to have a band? Would we be allowed to have an orchestra at that wedding if, after all, an aval is not allowed to listen to music? So maybe you'll say, I'm allowed to go make a special dispensation. The parent is allowed to go to the wedding. But what are you going to say? Now he's allowed to listen to music also? So Rav Moshe says, well, what would a wedding be without music? So the chasen and kala have to now suffer because the parent is in Shiva? That's not fair. And on top of that, Rav Moshe says, and this is a very interesting, what I think is a very debatable point, Rav Moshe says, the father or mother of a chasen or kala are so excited to be at the child's wedding and to watch them get married, they don't even notice the music. Interesting. Rav Moshe says, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make it more or less exciting for them. They're excited just about the fact that the child is getting married to a wonderful boy, a wonderful girl. They're not even paying attention to what's going on. They're not even noticing the music, not focusing on it. Therefore, says Rav Moshe, I would have no problem at all to have music at this wedding. The father or mother is allowed to attend the wedding, no problem at all. Even in the middle of Shiva, we're even allowed to have music. That's not where the focus is. The parents are focusing on the simcha that's in front of them. The music is something that they don't even notice at all. I thought that that was a very fascinating statement of Rav Moshe. Whether or not it's true, I don't know. But either way, Rav Moshe says it would have been mutter either way because we don't want to take away from the simcha of the chasam akala. So therefore, Rav Moshe says he would say that it would be permissible. Then he says, well, would the father or mother, once they're at the wedding, would they be allowed to join the dinner as well? Can they sit down with all the guests? Do they have a right to participate and sit at the dais? Let's say you have a dais with the chasen and kala sitting together. Would the parents be allowed to join them on the dais? Perhaps not. So Rav Moshe gets into all those details. And fine, that's the basic synopsis of Rav Moshe's position. This was met with a lot of very, very great challenge. Rav Moshe, many of Rav Moshe's contemporaries felt that this was completely wrong, and his psak was incorrect. My father told me that he remembers at the time when the tshuva of Rav Moshe came out. It was a big discussion at the time, and many of the contemporary poskim felt that this was incorrect. I never know when my father says many of the contemporary poskim, I feel like he's talking about himself. He just doesn't want to say, I disagreed with Rav Moshe. So I asked him last night, I said, did you agree with Rav Moshe's psak? He said, of course not. How could I agree with it? It's wrong. It's totally wrong, which is interesting. My father has tremendous covet for Rav Moshe, but he felt that this was not correct. He said he remembers in yeshiva at the time that all the rabbeim were talking about this tshuva when the chelek of Igros Moshe came out. They were all discussing this tshuva. How could Rav Moshe write such a thing? So I found that interesting on its own. It means that when Igros Moshe chelek beis came out, every rebbe in yeshiva actually read through it and read through it carefully enough that they were able to pick out what was a major chiddush that they could not accept. That's it's a big madrega to be able to have that. But that is what my father told me. Rabbi Avadia Yosef has a tshuva where he writes also that he has very great objection to this Chiddush of Rav Moshe. He does not agree with him at all. And he says that if you want to do anything, then he says maybe, Bekoshi, maybe we can allow the parent to stand outside to listen to the brachos, but to let the parent come into the hall and see all the guests and greet all them and participate in the simcha and be there sitting at the table with them, says Rabbi Avadi Yosef and Rabbi Yashiv and other Achronim say, they find this very, very hard to accept, and it's something that they're not willing to agree with, and they voice their very strong objection to Rabbi Moshe's Heter that he wrote. So, when I was asked this question, would I be allowed to attend my grandson's wedding if I'm in fact in the middle of Shiva, should my brother pass away? The answer was, I don't think so. Rabbi Moshe gives a Heter, but it's not universally accepted. It's a very shaky Heter. It's something that there's a great objection to. And not so simple. Not so simple to be makel. But what I did tell him was the following. We'll get to your question in a minute. What I did tell him was the following. I said, are you comfortable, should your brother Rachmana Litzlan pass away, are you comfortable without being informed of his passing? And he said to me, what does that mean? So I said, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, it seems clear that so long as the Avel is not aware of the fact that somebody died, the Avelis, the Shiva, doesn't kick in. So I said, you can instruct your family not to tell you, and then, as long as you don't know, you're not an Avel. And we have a right to invite you to the Simcha and to participate along with you. So let's get into that a little bit. I know that that's a big Chiddush, and it sounds very strange and very crazy, but under the circumstances, I think it was the right thing to do. And I gave him the option. Is that something that you'd be comfortable with? He said, under the circumstances, I think that is what I would like to do. And that is what was done. So it comes really from a Gemara Maseches Pesachim. The Gemara says that one of the Amoraim sent his friend to find out how somebody was feeling. They had a mutual friend who wasn't feeling well. He sent one of his friends to find out how he was doing, and he came back. And he ripped Kriya, because when he got to the home of the friend, he saw that he had passed away. When he came back to the Beis Medrash to tell all of the other Chaverim there, he had his shirt was turned backwards. He didn't want them to see right away. So they asked him, how's he feeling? And he said, well, you know, my shirt's backwards, my shirt's right side up, upside down. He gave all kinds of excuses. He made them understand on their own that obviously something terrible happened, and this friend that they all had been worrying about had passed away. Says the Gemara, why don't you just tell them straight? They asked you a question. Is he doing okay? Why don't you just say, no, he died? The answer is because the Gemara says, motzi diba huksil. Somebody who goes around gossiping and sharing negative information is considered to be a fool. And that's not something that we should be busy with. Even though today we see that everybody sends out emails and the minute a tragedy happens, there's WhatsApps and things and everyone's all over the place. And very often they're sharing information that's not even true. But yet, we have to be very careful with that. I was just talking to someone last week who lost a relative who was very, very, very prominent, unfortunately passed away. And one of the children of a very famous politician, let's just say, who passed away, and one of his children who was talking to me last week said that they got the call that their parent had passed away, and before they even had a chance to call their spouse and their children to tell them that their father-in-law and grandfather had just died, before that even happened, they got from the news outlets that he had passed away. And they just said how inappropriate it was, how it was so difficult to deal with that as a family, that they didn't even have a chance to process, they didn't have a chance to talk to each other, when's the Levaya, what are we doing, to put themselves together, to figure out the details, because the whole world had to know about it, just because one person knew. And it's something we need to be careful about. The Shulchan Aruch says, motzi diba huksil. In fact, the Medrash Tanchuma writes that the Meraglim, when they were sent, we know Shlach Lecha Anashim, Moshe Rabbeinu chose very special individuals to be the ones singled out to be the Meraglim. And yet the Medrash, when it talks about the Meraglim rights, it references a pasuk in Sefer Mishlei that refers to the Meraglim as ksilim, as fools. So ask the Medrash, what do you mean? V'chi ksilim hayu ha-meraglim? You think the Meraglim were a bunch of fools? These were the leaders of the generation. How can you call them fools? And the Medrash says the reason why is because they came back and they shared negative information with people. They said it straight out. They weren't careful in the way that they shared the information, and therefore they are given the appellation of being ksilim, of being fools. This is the way foolish people act. This is the way they talk. This is what they do. In fact, the Vilna Gaon has a very keen insight where he writes, the Gemara tells us, just listen carefully to the words, al besuras tovas, when you hear, when you get a besura about something good, you make a bracha hatova ametiv. So somebody tells you, you just won the lottery, you just had a baby, you just had a grandchild, you make a hatova ametiv, it's a great simcha. Al shmuas ros, if you hear something bad, then you say a dayin ha'emes. Writes the Vilna Gaon, why does it say besuras tovas and shmuas ros? It should say the same word, the same verb. It should say Besuros Tovas, Besuros Ros. Writes the Vilna Gaon, no. Besura means when somebody tells you something outright. A Besura is something that we share. Somebody had a baby. You call somebody, you tell them, oh, this one had a baby, that one's got engaged, the big Simcha. We share a Simcha, we tell it to other people. It's a Besura Tova. On that you make a Tova Ametit. Writes the Vilna Gaon, when you have negative information, we don't share it. Shmuas Ros. Sometimes the word gets around. You happen to be in the supermarket, you hear somebody's talking about something, but we don't deliberately go and talk about negative things. On Shmuas Ros, if it happens to reach you and you hear something negative, you make a bracha of a dain ha'emes, but writes the Vilna Gaon, that is the way it should be, that we don't go ahead and share negative information. It's interesting that Reb Shimshon Pinkus writes in one of his svarim, why do you say that someone who shares negative information is considered to be a ksil? Why is he a fool? Just say you're a bad person. You're sharing negativity. You're spreading ill will. You're saying negative things about other people. You're sharing bad news. Why do you call him a ksil? Why is he a fool? So writes Reb Shimshon Pinkus, I found this to be a very interesting idea. He says, we know that in Chumash it says, the special identifying characteristic of a human being is the fact that we are Ruach Memalala. Right? The Targum Unkelis writes in Chumash, what is unique and special about humanity over the animal kingdom? It's the fact that we have the ability to communicate, that we can use words, that we can speak, that we can share ideas. And therefore, it writes Reb Shimshon Pinkus, if you're a Chacham, you use your words to share divrei chachma, to share, doesn't have to be Torah, but to share wisdom with other people. That's what shows the unique characteristic, the quality of a human being, is the fact that I have the ability to communicate ideas to other people. But there are some people who don't know how to share chachma. And the only way that they can express their ability, their gift of speech, is to share negativity. Those people are showing off their ignorance. Those people are showing that they are ksilim, that they are foolish. You don't have chachma to share, so you have to use your mouth to share other things. And you don't understand that you're just highlighting to the world how silly and foolish you are, that you can't use your mouth, you can't use your words for things that are actually going to be positively impacting others. An interesting idea, something to think about. Based on this Gemara Psachim and based on all that we've mentioned, the discussion is actually relevant lahalacha. So the Rishonim write that I do not have an obligation to share news with a relative who passes away. I don't have to tell the relatives that the person passed away. Now, obviously, we're talking about a situation where the kvura is going to be taken care of. You're not just going to leave the nifter as is. We have to make sure that there's going to be a kavod ames, that they're going to be cared for the way they're supposed to be, that everything's going to be appropriately handled. But the Shulchan Aruch does paskin like this, and the Shulchan Aruch says, Misha meis lo meis velo no dalo. If somebody lost a relative and they are unaware, ein chova shayomri lo. You don't have to inform that person. And writes the Shulchan Aruch, afilu ala vivalimo, even if it's the parent that passed away. You don't have to inform them. You don't have to tell the person. And if you do, says the Shulchan Aruch, you tell someone unnecessarily, we call you motzi diva huksil. That's exactly what the Gemara says here. Writes the Rama, he tones it down a little bit, and he says, well, we have the minik to tell the children, because after all, they're the ones who have to say Kaddish. So says the Rama, it's not fair to rob the parents of an opportunity for someone to say Kaddish for them just because we're not going to tell them. So the Rama says that we tell the children because we want to give the schus to the parents to have somebody saying Kaddish. But based on that, the Pischa Tshuva writes, what happens if somebody loses their life on Shabbos or Yom Tov? When you're not going to make any funeral arrangements anyway, and you're not going to be writing a hesped, and you're not going to be making phone calls, and you're not going to be with the Chevra Kadisha, then why would you tell them? Why would you share the information? I remember Rabbi Willig told us that I think he lost his mother on a Friday night or something, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it was a Yantif night, something. I don't remember. It was in a hospital in the Bronx. Him and his brother walked back after the mother passed away, and they made sure that everything was going to be okay till after Shabbos or Yom Tov. They came back to Rabbi Willig's home and his children were there. And they said they had a regular Yom Tov, they had a regular Shabbos, they didn't say a word to anybody until Shabbos was over. They said, what right do we have to make everybody else at the table sad? So that takes a tremendous amount of gvura to hold in your feelings of loss and your feelings of anxiety and everything that's about to come to you. You're about to sit Shiva, you're about to be an Onen. But they said they held it in for the entire Shabbos Yom Tov because, like the Pischa Tshuva says, what are you going to gain? Why would you tell the person that they're in Avel when there's nothing they can do about it right now? Rabbi Avadia Yosef writes an amazing story that he remembers when Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef writes, he's the son of Rabbi Avadia, that when his mother lost her brother, so Rabbi Avadia chose, for whatever reason, I think Rabbi Avadia's wife was not well, he chose not to tell her for a couple of years. Now, I guess the brother and sister didn't talk that often. I'm not sure exactly how that went for many years. Rabbi Avadia chose not to tell his wife for a number of years. And my father told me once that my grandfather, Rabbi Melech Shechter, who was a great Talmud Chacham, He was 96, I think, when he passed away. So Baruch Hashem, he lived a very long, happy, and healthy life. But my grandfather, when he was in his 90s, said that he had a brother who lived out of town, and he was not able, my grandfather said, I'm not in a physical position where I'm able to sit Shiva should my brother pass away. So he gave instructions to my father that when the time comes and my brother passes away, I don't want to know about it until after the Shloshim, because I just am not in a physical state to be able to sit Shiva for a week. And that's what they did. They didn't tell him. And the halacha is that if you find out after the Shloshim has already completed, so it's called a Shmur Rechoka, and all you need to do is sit Shiva for a little bit of time during the day, and that would suffice. And that is what they did. Not only that, I saw a story quoted in the Yalkut Yosef, which is the son of Rabbi Avadia, a beautiful sefer. He writes that the Lubavitcher Rebbe had a brother who passed away in America. This is the story. I don't know where he got it from, but he writes that the Lubavitcher Rebbe had a brother who lived in America, and for 13 years, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was sending his mother letters in the name of his brother, making up stories about how he was doing and what's going on in his life and his children and his family. For 13 years, he was sending his own mother letters in the name of his brother so that his mother wouldn't find out that her own son died, because he knew that it would cause the mother too much pain to know that her son had passed away. For 13 years, he chose to hide it from her and to write letters in the name of his brother. An amazing accomplishment. Again, you have to be talking about somebody who can handle that. You have to know that it's the appropriate thing to do. It's not always the appropriate thing to do, but in these circumstances it was, and I think in this circumstance it certainly is as well. And that is what we did. Unfortunately, the brother did pass away 2 days later. The entire family went to the Levaya, except for the direct relative, because he didn't know about it. And they gave the Kavod HaMeis. The Kvura happened the way it was supposed to. And this person has no idea that he's really in the middle of Shiva. Now, you come to the Chasana and then you wonder, how am I able to dance with this person? I understand, like, they're in the middle of Shiva, but they don't know about it, but I know about it, so it's very strange. So the Shulchan Aruch says, if a person is in that kind of strange situation where everybody else knows that they're in Avil, but they don't know, in that situation, the Shulchan Aruch says, you're allowed to invite them to a simcha, you're allowed to dance with them, you're allowed to do everything as normal. In fact, the Sefer Hasidim writes, what happens if a person, we know that an Avil is aser b'tashmish amita, a couple is not allowed to have intimate relations when either the husband or the wife is in Shiva. So writes the Sefer Hasidim, what happens if a woman is in the middle of Shiva and she happens not to be aware of it, but the husband knows? So is he allowed to be together with his wife at night when he knows that she's in Avelis? Writes the Sefer Hasidim, yes, life is normal. Everything goes on as normal because the Lashon that he says is, Ein Avelis Noheges Kodem Hashmiya. The Avelis does not kick in until the person finds out about it. And here, you have withheld the information. Obviously, it has to be for a good reason. So that would be something that would not pose any issue at all with any of the restrictions of Avelis that we're normally familiar with. So you have to ask yourself, if we see the Gemara says that you're not really supposed to share negative information, and you're not even supposed to share it with family relatives sometimes, so then how do you explain why it is that nowadays we have posters that go up all over the place and emails that go out? Why do we do such a thing? So Nishmas Avraham says in the name of Shlomo Zalman that nowadays we know that everyone expects to find out, and we know that the more people that are going to know about it, the more Kavod HaMeis is going to be. We're not sharing the information just to share negativity with each other. We're sharing the information because we know that the more people that will find out, the bigger the Levaya will be, the more the Hespedim will be prepared, the more of the Kavod it will be for the Nifter, and that is why we share it. And therefore he says, that's why Rav Shlomo Zalman said, we live in a very different reality. It's not like, you know, it's not like in olden days where they had a little Levaya with a couple of people who lived in the shtetl. Now we live in a community where if somebody finds out about a tragedy, many people show up and they try to be mishtatev and they try to help be menachem. And therefore he says in a situation like that, we know that the rules have changed and we know that we act very differently today than maybe they acted in the times of the Gemara. In fact, the Shach even expresses this a little bit differently, and he says, what happens if you have a patient who has a diagnosis that is a very negative diagnosis, and you know that the patient is going to have a very difficult time accepting that diagnosis? So, you know, nowadays the minig is that the doctors just say it like it is, and they don't withhold any information, and they say all the negativity sometimes. I mean, obviously they say it with sensitivity, but sure, they have to be very open with the patients. But the Shach writes, if we know that it's best for the patient not to know all the details, so what would the halacha be? I remember a couple of years ago, I was with Rav Asher Weiss, and I had brought him to meet a family who lost a child. And one of the things that was really nagging at these parents, obviously they felt devastated over the loss of their child, but one of the things that was really nagging at them was that their child was in high school at the time, And they said that they were not honest with the child when the treatments really weren't working and things were really spiraling out of control. They chose to withhold the information from their child. They didn't want them to give up hope. They didn't want them to hear all the negative diagnosis and prognosis that they had. And they felt very, very guilty. Now that the child passed away, they felt guilty that they did not share the information properly. And at the time, Rav Asher said that he did the same. When his wife was very, very sick in the end, and she was not able to read her own charts, and she wasn't able to talk to the doctors on her own, he said that he chose not to share all the information with her. Obviously, she understood that she was in a critical condition, but he said sometimes you have to know the patient, and you have to know what they can handle. You have to know what it's going to do to them if they find out. And you have to know what it's going to do to them if they find out accidentally and you didn't tell them. Are they going to be even more upset that you didn't share the information? So you have to know who you're dealing with. It's a very specific question. But again, that speaks to this very issue. Do we have a right to withhold information from a person who we know is in Avelis, from a person who we know is in Shiva? Or do we have to share the information openly? So what we did was we did not share with them. The person is actually in Avelis but does not know about it. The question then becomes, when do we tell them? So when do we tell them? So in Shulchan Aruch it says that if you tell them within the period of Shloshim, then they have to sit Shiva whenever they find out. So the 7-day count starts whenever they find out. So I said, if you're going to tell them within the Shloshim, you should at least tell them at the end of a day, right? Tell them 30 minutes before the Shkia. This way, they can sit on the floor for 30 minutes. That will count as day one. Then they only have 6 days left. On the seventh day, they can also just sit Shiva for a little bit of time. So you already knocked off 2 days very easily. If you're going to wait till after Shloshim to inform them, then the halacha is they do not need to sit Shiva at all. All that one needs to do, if it's referred to as a Shmua Rechoka, if I hear about the death of a relative after it's already been 30 days since their demise, the halacha would be that I do not have to sit Shiva, even though I'm a very close relative, even though I feel very close to this person. But since I found out more than 30 days after the person passed away, that would be something that would preclude me from having the obligation of sitting Shiva, and that is the plan. As of now, we're hoping that nobody will spill the beans, we're hoping nobody will share the information before the Shloshim, and the plan is that it will be a Shmua Rechoka, and then the person will not really have to sit Shiva. The added complication was that this relative was one of the only religious relatives in the family, and he was the one who was going to be expected to say Kaddish. So now I felt bad, because the Rama says, yeah, we don't share information, but when Kaddish has to be said, then we do share information. So I had someone else in the shul who volunteered very generously to say Kaddish until the news comes out. So we have the Kaddish covered, we have the Aval covered, the couple got married, everyone's happy, everyone's well. And we should talk about Simchas, but I thought it was a very, very interesting question just to look through all the different pieces in Shulchan Aruch and understand how it works is very fascinating to me. Yeah.
Is there a